Well, good morning, everybody, or in some cases, afternoon. Today is Saturday, November 14th, 2020. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call. We are not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We are not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Carol Worlius, and my associate, Jim Knox, and I have these calls every second and fourth Saturday of the month. These calls are recorded and available on our website, www.indicatorinformation.com, iqdcalls.com, and on YouTube. As we get closer and closer to an expected event, we thought this would be a good time to review our common law contract trust and why we think it is the best vehicle for you to protect your assets. As always, your questions are welcome. Star 6 to raise your hand. But again, we are going to change things up a bit today. We will be doing Q&A for most of the call, so please have your questions about trust ready. We need to end this call promptly at the top of the hour. We will not be taking questions about the event, as we really don't know much more than you do. We cannot give you advice or direction on what to do at your exchange. At this point, if you're paying attention, you know, no doubt know as much or maybe more than we do. If you're looking for more information, we suggest you listen to Charlie Ward, Bruce Fleming, TNT, etc. If you do call in with a question about the RV, I will have to disconnect you. What we're offering you is absolutely the best asset protection available at a very fair price of only $19.95. Years ago, we were getting up to $10,000 for these trusts. People paid it because they recognized the value. We've reduced these prices for denarians because we realize a lot of people in this situation may be currency rich and cash poor. Our trust has a long-standing pedigree that, to our knowledge, no one else can claim. So let's talk about trust. So anybody with a question, please star 6 to raise your hand. If not, you're just going to have to listen to me talk for a while. I did recently receive a cheat sheet from one of the Intel providers. It does mention the necessity of creating an irrevocable trust with the following attributes. It should be complex, non-grantor, discretionary, spendthrift, and provide asset protection. And our trust has all those attributes. We offer a standard motherlode trust to hold all of your currency. Besides that, we offer business management trusts, annuity trusts, investment trusts, real estate trusts, vehicle trusts. Jim, am I missing any?
Nope, keep going.
Okay. We have a question. Good. All right. Good morning, Thomas.
Yes. Running, trying to get on. I have a question for Jim, and it's not pertaining to... It's pertaining to the rates on the exchange. Is anyone
have
any information?
We cannot talk about that. We don't know. Cannot talk
all
about
right.
that. If you have a question about trust, that would be great.
Okay. Well, I don't have a trust question. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. And while we're at this, Jim brought up quite correctly, that we're spending an awful lot of time with cordiality. You know, I ask people how they are, they ask how we are, et cetera, et cetera. So let's just say that I'm doing fine, and Jim is doing fine, and in the interest of saving time and possibly getting more questions answered, let's drop all the cordiality today and go with your question. Is that okay with you, Jim?
Perfect.
Okay. All right. So where was I? Hey. So, how about just a little general information on the pure contract business trust? While our trust is technically a pure contract business trust, we refer to it simply as a contract trust or a trust. A trust is created by the creator, setting out the complete terms of operating the trust. The trust becomes a firm contract when the first trustee accepts the terms of the declaration of trust and accepts the position of first trustee. The declaration has provisions to be governed by a board of trustees. The board may constitute 1 to 3 trustees. All of the power is vested in the board. the board has a fiduciary duty to administer and conserve the assets of the trust, to defend the structure of the trust and its assets, and make distributions to the trust certificate holders according to the terms of the declaration. The board may appoint or hire a manager or managers to manage the trust assets. The manager or managers report to the board and present to the board evidence that the trust is continuing to function according to the terms of declaration. And recently, one of our clients was looking at some real estate. And he was ready to make an offer using his trust, and his broker said, "This has your name on it. Do you really want to be exposed that way?" And the guy said, "Of course not. Let me call Carol." So he did, and what we did was create not a manager, but we created the position of president. And if you read through the trust document itself, it says you can create a president, you know, all the normal corporate executives that you're used to. So we created a position of president that works on and for behalf of the executive trustees only and at their direction on specific tasks. So when this offer to purchase property was made, the president of the trust was the one that signed the offer. It makes a lot of sense if you are trying to keep a very low profile, which, as you know, we've been suggesting the whole time. Anybody have any questions about that particular item? Jim, you want to add something?
No, not really. I was actually doing something else here. I'm trying to log into the website to bring up a couple things I wanted to talk about from that.
Okay, all right. So then I will just continue to talk for a few minutes. The trust is private, and its affairs remain confidential. A trust need not be registered with any city, county, state, or federal agency. However, certain activities of a trust customary to ownership may require recording, such as the deed to property owned by the trust. Under certain circumstances, the trust may have a federal identification number from the Internal Revenue Service. And as most of you know, you cannot get a bank account without an EIN number. And in order to get an EIN number, we need your Social Security number. But that should be about it. So let's take a little break here because I see another question. Gary, you're up.
Hey, Carol and Jim. This is Gary in Phoenix.
Hi.
Question, can you go over the president again? Like, most of us are familiar with being trustee of the account, but as president, we just have to, make a minute to nominate ourselves as president of the trustee, and then you're saying...
You're going to nominate somebody else. You want to keep your name private.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So we wouldn't use ourselves as president. We'd use somebody else's name as president.
Correct. Jim, why don't you talk for a few minutes, and I will look up that particular minute that we just created and answer Gary's question.
Okay, well, if you go to Section 3 of your trust, and you go down to, I think it's L. Yeah, L. The trustees may, at their discretion, elect from among their number a president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, and or any other officers deemed expedient. Any trustee may hold two or more offices simultaneously, their duties being those such as are customary or as prescribed by the board. They may employ agents, executives, and other employees or designate third persons to perform services or to hold funds for special purposes. So in that, now, a little clause, you can be the president or you can hire a president. It says they may employ agents, executives, and other employees. President's an executive. So you can hire a president as an executive to be on the name on the deed instead of you. So that's how you can get around. That's how we've been doing it. I don't have an issue. I have automobiles through trust, and my name's there because I'm driving the car. So I left it there. I could hide that by hiring a president, but I decided not to do that. And it's also easier for insurance purposes if your name's on there for getting car insurance, but you could modify it. But that is a clause that I think is overlooked by most people. You can do this. So the other issue is I am the president of two of my trusts. The Board of Trustees, which consists of me, myself, and I, we got together one afternoon, and we decided to make me the president. So I don't tell people I'm the trustee of this organization. I'm the president. They understand president. They don't know what trustee means. So I have a minute that allowed me to be the president. So that's why we set this up. Does it make sense?
I think so.
Okay. So I'll just go read Section 3, Number L, and it'll give you all the information you need there. And it's under Section 3, which is Appointment and Powers of Trustees and Successors. Down in there, Number L, it talks about, or Letter L, it talks about what you can do as a trustee.
Very good. So, thank you.
You bet.
Okay. So I found the resolution that we created. And so-and-so, the trustee, appoints the agent as president of the trust organization. The president shall have the authority to make purchases in the trust organization's name and behalf. And then it spells out how much they can or cannot spend. The president should serve at the discretion of the trustees and may not make any purchases without the express written permission of the trustees. President shall not be required to enter into any personal obligation or liability dealing with said property or to make himself liable for any damages. Resolved, the agent is hereby appointed president. Okay, and I, trustee, the understand, representing all the trustees, have unanimously resolved that agent, president of the trust organizations, be and hereby, my goodness, I'm having a problem this morning, be and hereby is authorized and instructed to proceed on behalf of the trust organization using discretion to consummate the purchase of that real property identified as, and legal description goes in there, and be it further resolved that agent, president, be and hereby is authorized to execute any and all documents required on behalf of this trust organization pertinent to the above authorized purchase. So that way you get to purchase property without your name showing up anywhere.
Excellent.
And most people think that's a good idea. Yeah. Okay.
Got another question
here. Hi, Ginger.
Good morning. Thank you for everything you guys do. My question is, number one, I would really love it to hear Jim again explain how he uses his management trust. And two, we this last year had someone pass away in our family that had no will. I didn't even think of this, but I was wondering, before you enter into probate and stuff, when someone passes and you basically become the PR or executor, could you just make them up a trust for that estate before you would even go to a probate situation?
Absolutely, before. Jim, go ahead.
Well, if the person has passed away, that means it's going to the property has to go through some type of a formal exchange to somebody. And
yeah.
I'd be nervous about doing it because it could be construed as trying to circumvent the law.
Yeah, they have to do it before the person dies.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That's the clarification part. It's a little confusing in the sense of once you go to the lawyer, and of course you go before the judge to become the PR. But I was just wondering at what point when you are that PR / old terminology executor, could you put that estate into the trust even though they have passed and you've been awarded the PR position?
That's something I'm not sure. I think each state's a little bit different on that. You'd have to consult with somebody that would actually could answer that question depending on the state laws of where the property is at or where the person died. Some places I think you probably could do it, but I'm not sure which ones those would be.
Yeah, probably depending on the state.
I actually run across this many years ago, and I'm trying to remember exactly how we worked that out. I don't remember for sure, but I know it was in Minnesota. And nobody finally got the property, in a trust, but I think that was post-probate, and then they gave it on to the kids and managed it for the kids, as I recall. It was a little foggy in my head. That's been 25 years ago. You'd have to meet with somebody that could answer that question at the state level.
Yeah, we'll do that. Because,
yeah,
as we all know, it's another cure for trust, thinking ahead.
saving you
a lot of money, not only legally with lawyers, but how you deal with that estate when it's completing out.
Yeah, that's one of the issues, is people don't think far enough ahead, and they don't have these set up at this specific time. Or they do like my ex-business partner did. We redid everything, and then he sat around and for 30 days and didn't get everything signed, and then passed away unexpectedly. And then another good friend of mine, one of my better friends, he died July 4th, a little over a year ago. And that's when the family was get together, and I set him up all brand new trusts, and he died that night on the 3rd. Or the morning of the 4th, so we never got things signed. And so I'm using these examples because you have to keep things current, and you got to do them. See, here's the funny part about this, not funny, ha-ha, but more funny, peculiar, is we intuitively know something's about to happen. We always do. There'll be little hints. And if you ignore those, you get caught in a situation like John did where he didn't sign it. Joe, he waited too long, and they didn't get their trust signed. So now we're fighting all these legal battles. So when all of a sudden you get the urge to do things, just do it. Consummate the transaction. Get it done. Get it signed. Do it the day that you think of it. And don't procrastinate, because you never know. You know, you get that little inkling something may be going wrong, and you start thinking about this, and then you don't do it. Well, you had your warning. You had your shot at it. You didn't pay attention.
Absolutely.
The rest of us have to suffer through that. You know.
So, would you share, Jim, again, how you use your management trust?
Sure. I'm doing mine. There's two ways to do it. We're going to explain how I do mine, and then we'll explain how the other way that you can do it. My management trust is set up to where it has one basic account. And my automobile trust has a contract with my mother lode. And it has some currency in the automobile trust that is going to loan to the mother lode trust to do the exchange. When that exchange is done, the instructions of the mother lode trust tell it that you must deposit those funds that I, as a real estate trustee, loaned to you in the management trust under the name of the vehicle trust. And then it has the money in there, and then when the management trust writes a check for whatever, I use the two-piece checks, and at the bottom I make a notation what it's for. And when I ledger it, it says, well, this is for payment of, you know, repairs to the 79 Dodge D100 pickup or whatever it may be. And that's how I do it. Now, the management trust is freestanding. It has an EI number, and it has a bank account. The motherlode trust has a bank account. The real estate trust and the automobile trust do not have bank accounts. So they contract to the management trust. So the contract is actually two-legged. One part of the contract goes to the motherlode trust. Other part goes to the management trust with instructions. So when the motherlode gets the instructions, there's an addendum to the instructions that says, okay, now once you get the money exchanged, then you have to give it to the management trust on behalf of the automobile trust, the vehicle trust. And then the contract is already set up between the vehicle trust and the management trust, and then that's it. That's all there is to do it. Now, I started my trust, each one individually, by me. And the other way to do this is you could have the mother lode trust be the creator of the management trust, instead of an individual. And that's easy to do. So if you did that, you would have the mother lode trust would be the creator, and when you sign as a creator, so you're going to be the trustee of the mother lode trust, and you're going to be the trustee of the management trust, and that's easy to do. So when you do the paperwork, you sign it as the mother lode trust, comma, your name, trustee knows otherwise. So you're doing this on behalf of the Mother Lode Trust. Once that's done, you as an individual, since you only did this as an agent, in essence, of the Mother Lode Trust, you qualify to be the trustee of the trust you're setting up. You could be also the trustee of the management trust. But that's the only time you can do that. Because you're doing it as an agent, you as creator. You're a human being an agent for the Mother Lode Trust that is actually the creator. See the difference? The Mother Lode Trust is the creator. You're simply the agent. You're the blood and sinew that uses your ability to sign things. And then once that's done, you still qualify to be the trustee of the management trust because that's a different, you're a different person. I don't like using the word person, but you get the general idea.
Yeah.
Now, a little side note here. Why do I not like using the word person? Well, the definition of the Internal Revenue has for person is kind of wonky. I think it's 77014B. Person is a corporation, trust, or other entity. It doesn't say a man, a woman, or child. It says corporation, trust, or other entity. And if you think about that, when you signed a 1040, the first time you did that, you became a person. You became another entity that they can tax. We won't go into that. But get the idea? You got to be careful of the words. Even though the trust has the word person here a few places, it's generic. When you go in and do your notary, it'll say man and woman, men and women, or whatever it may be. If it's two or one, it's very, very specific because you don't want to get drug into an area that you're not comfortable like. You don't want to be a person. But the generic term that I used a few minutes ago on section 3, number L, said person. I'm okay with that. It's a general term. Does that kind of help? Are we all on the same page here?
Yes. I'm definitely going to listen to the replay several times, though.
Yeah, I understand that one. It is a little bit convoluted, but it does work. And it is ethical, moral, and lawful. I won't say legal, lawful. That's what you're looking for. You want to be lawful. Legal is more of a statutory thing. Lawful is more of a, you know, republic type term. What's next? What else
thanks.
Can we talk about? Any other questions on that?
Nope, I'm great, thanks.
You bet. Get your, bye.
Okay. All right, we have another caller from San Diego. Area code 619.
Yes, this is Raul. This is the first time I've heard of assigning a president to be the signatory of a real estate purchase. I was under the impression that my management trust has a contract with the Mother Lode Trust, and once I get ready to buy a house, I buy from you a real estate trust. Is that correct so far?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I was under the impression that for liability purposes that the real estate trust would be the owner of the house, not a president. I.e. myself as president, for liability purposes. I'm a little confused about that. Do you understand my question?
Yeah, I understand your question. Carol, you want me to take that?
Go ahead, Jim.
All right. Hold on a second, folks. Excuse me. Okay, so the real estate trust is the responsible party. However, what we're trying to show you is if you do not want your name on the deed as trustee, then you can hire a president, and they could be on the deed as president.
Now, okay.
In my real estate transactions, I'm going to do that. In my automobile transactions, it's a little difficult because I want to make sure that my name's someplace on that piece of paper so I have permission to drive the vehicle. And I also have a letter from the Board of Trustees that I have permission to drive the vehicle in the glove compartment with my insurance card and with the registration. It has come up in the past where I was asked, well, this car is in trust. Do you have permission to be driving it? And I said, well, yeah. Do you have anything that says that? No, I got around it that particular day, but I put that in the car right the next day. So it's just a one little deal. It's just a paragraph, and you sign it as the Board of Trustees. And, you know, your name, executive trustee, and so on and so forth. It's not a big deal. So my point on this is if you don't mind having your name out there, leave it the way it is. Just do the real estate trust. You're the trustee. You're going to sign it. It's going to have your name and the house. If you're uncomfortable with that, then you can hire a president. That's under Section 3.
And the president wouldn't be subject to any liability at all.
No, it's just like the creator. The president would not have any first power.
I see. That when you said the word creator, that answers that everything, because once the creator is we finish with the you know, the signatures on the trust, they have no responsibility anymore. They created it, but now it's in motion, and so the president would serve the same function. He wouldn't be liable, but it would just be some signature to say that this is legal or something like that.
Correct. So it says, right? You're good. You're good at this, Raul. You're good at this. It says what you're talking about is on minute two, the very last line. It says, signing and acknowledging this minute by the creator, it releases him or her from all future responsibility, duties, authority, or liability regarding this trust organization. So
bingo.
The president is basically the same thing. When he signs that, he doesn't have any control. The Board of Trustees have control. The only thing he's got is signatory power to move the property into, or not into this, but the signatory power to sign for the trust at the registrar's office.
Okay. Now, can I get the samples of these minutes on the website of these additions?
Yeah. We're going to load them.
Okay.
And by the way, folks, Raul and everybody else, the website is on the new server. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. And I am now adding more content to it. So, in fact, I was doing that this morning. So we're going to go ahead and go forward now that it's moved to this new home and start adding all that good stuff that we keep promising.
Okay. So, thank you, Jim, for clarifying that question. So there's always something coming up. But another question is, when we have all these advisors, et cetera, they will be somewhat savvy about these things, won't they? I mean,
well,
I hope they will.
We do too, but we don't know. We don't know. Okay. You know, it goes back to my most famous and sought after and used expression. We don't know what we don't know because nobody's done this before. So
okay. When
we go in there, they're going to have a heyday with me because I'm going to ask all kinds of questions. And
can I sit next?
That?
Can I sit next to you?
Sure. Yeah, I'm going to try, and if I can find the right person, right man, right woman that I can work with on that, I'll try and do. Mm-hmm. So a lot of audio work and ask the questions and have them walk through it. And if they don't understand the trust, well, trust me, I can explain it to them. You know, I can get it through. And I don't think we'll have much of a problem because I think this is going to be something that's not going to be unknown to them, knowing full well that we're going in a different direction here with our country, meaning we're going to be using the Republic shortly, which is going to be all common law. We're going to get rid of the admiralty and the maritime law. And Charlie Ward talked about that this week. He did a great job explaining it. So if you don't know who Dr. Charlie Ward is, his website is Dr. Charlie Ward, drcharlieward.com. He just moved to that that private, personally owned website because he kept getting taken down by YouTube. So he's a plethora of knowledge in a lot of this stuff. He is English. He does live in Spain. And he doesn't understand everything about the American Constitution. He made a statement the other day. The Constitution says, you know, they got 10 days. Well, the Constitution says I think, 42 U.S.C. something or other. It's the law that you have to wait 10 days to do certain things after the election. And Trump's waited the 10 days. Now he's going forward. And but he claimed that the Constitution gave that power. It wasn't. It was a statute. But other than that, I cut the guy some slack because he's very, very knowledgeable. So Again, that's if you want to learn more about the new law that we'll be under shortly, he's got a great audio or video on that.
Hey, Jim, I have one last question. Let's say we go to where we have to go. Would you suggest that we not buy real estate right away, but get all these real estate trusts and president thing all underway before we even think of buying something?
That is an excellent question, and I'm going to give you my opinion, just my opinion. I will try to live up to what I'm telling everybody, but I have an issue, and I'll explain that after I tell you what I'm going to tell you. You should wait 6 months before you do hardly anything. You're going to have to have your brain acclimate to your new life. You have to internalize this new life. You have to realize that this is a life, not a one, it's a one-time thing, and this is your future. We're going to be so caught up in buying this and buying that, things we've always wanted. We're going to go out and go crazy and start buying this stuff. And, you know, we don't want to have that mentality that so many people get when they win the lottery. And we've seen story after story after story is they're broke within 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, folks, it can happen to you too. So I'm trying to reason with people, say, look, you've got the money. There's no hurry. There's houses everywhere. There's cars everywhere. There's airplanes everywhere. There's yachts everywhere. Don't worry about it. You'll find what you want. Take your time. And that's what I'm trying to do myself. The caveat to that is I'm going to be homeless shortly because I'm leaving where I live and I'm going to move to Florida. So I have to buy something. And I thought about moving into one of these really nice upscale senior residences, but I'm going to have security and somebody around to take care of me. I just had another bad fall this week. We won't go into the details, but I was in the hospital. So I need somebody around me. So I'm going to violate my own rule because I have to get something right away where I can have somebody taking care of me. Other than that, I'm not going to be buying a whole lot of stuff.
I was just thinking that I would just pay off my mortgage. That would be it. And that's the only thing I would do.
That's an excellent thing to do. You know, if you have real estate, folks, stay where you're at for 6 months. Pay it off. Pay off your cars.
Okay.
Pay off all your debts. You know, clean up the credit cards. By the way, I don't have any credit cards. I'm debt-free. I'm one of the few people that I know that do that. I drive a 40-year-old pickup.
Yeah. So you're not a legend in your own mind.
Pardon me?
So you're not a legend in your own mind, though.
Sometimes. So, anyway,
thank you.
Well, that's the story I would say to everybody. Take time. Get used to it. Let your brain acclimate to it. Get your family to acclimate to it before you go out and do anything wild and crazy.
Okay. Roger.
All right, guy.
Thank you.
Good talking to you.
Okay. Yeah. Gary, you're up.
Yeah, hey, Jim, this is Gary again in Phoenix. If we hire someone as president and they buy a property for us, and then we later on want to sell that property, does the president have to sign off on that, and what if he's not around?
You get him to pre-sign the document. You go get the documents to release that property, all right, from his signature.
Okay.
In other words, it's not uncommon to have somebody, you know, sign their resignation and put it in a drawer and eventually just hand it to somebody because they're out the door because they got finally annoyed with somebody or fed up with the job. It's not uncommon. And you can do that. And because it's at your discretion, not theirs.
Okay.
You can get them to sign a resignation in advance. And then you can exercise that anytime you want. And what you do is you'd have that signed, notarized, and you exercise it. Then you attach that to whomever you're going to have. You could actually be the sign. You could actually sign off yourself as trustee when you get rid of the property. Because you broke the line of ownership when you sell it. So what does it matter if your name was on it when you sold it? It only matters when you buy it because that's the name everybody's going to be looking at. So,
understand.
Yes, you can do it that way.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You
bet. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Don, you're next.
Hello, this is Don in Connecticut.
Hi.
Two questions from past presentations. First, can a single annuity trust pay multiple people?
Of course, yes. It can do anything it wants to do. So you buy one annuity, and then you can divvy it up any way you want, because the owner of the annuity is the trust, not the individual.
Right.
You can spread it out as far and wide as you can. You got a second question?
A while back, it said that a trust can own an LLC and 99% of it. Why only 99%? And can a trust own multiple LLCs?
Well, the 99% rule is not a hard and fast rule. You could own 100%, but if you have 100% control, sometimes that will raise red flags. That's why I said that. Depends on the state you're operating in. So you could own 100%, and it can own as many as it wants. Now, you can wrap. I've wrapped corporations with trust, and where all of the stock of the corporation is now vested in the trust. And that's all. It's just the stock. And that's complete control of the corporation. The corporation has the asset in its own name, but you have all the stock.
Or that 1% would be held by the person actually doing the work of the LLC.
Exactly. Usually it's going to be an attorney or somebody like that, or some type of fiduciary. But there are states where if 100% is owned by one person, then it's not a limited liability company anymore. So you have to have that 1% off to the side. Now, that's in some states, not all states. And, you know, I don't know the law on every one of them, but just a couple of them. So that's why I said it was kind of a CYA, cover your asset. And that's why I said the 99% to the 100%.
It's a good point. I currently have an LLC, and I guess I'm the 100% on that as the only name on it. But it brings up some very good points. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Okay. Lawrence, you're next.
Good morning, Jim and Carol. How are you guys?
Good.
Very good. What's your question?
Hey, I just wanted to know, can you guys reiterate one more time, how do you take money from your trust, the different ways that you can legally take money from the trust? Use for whatever, just say for whatever purposes.
All right. Carol, why don't you take this one for a minute? I got a cough.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, there's several ways you can get money out of the trust. You can pay yourself a distribution because you are a certificate holder. And distribution merely means, okay, there's so much extra money in the trust at the end of the year, we're going to distribute it to the certificate holder. So that's one way. You can pay yourself a salary, which we strongly recommend. You pay yourself a salary. It can be whatever amount that you need or you think you want. Let's say you're going to start off taking a salary, say $5,000 a month, and then you realize that's not enough, so you give yourself a raise. Or vice versa, if you start off by giving your salary $10,000 a month and it becomes too much, then you demote your salary. That's not a big deal. You can also borrow from the trust, which is a very, very good way to purchase new items, specifically real estate, vehicles, stuff like that. It's a good way to borrow from the trust because there's no tax on it. You know, if you get a distribution or if you get a salary, that is a taxable event to you. Well, right now it is. We don't know, but that's going to be in the future. We could also have one for trust. As far as purchasing properties, you can have your mother lode trust create and fund the real estate trust, as Jim was talking about earlier.
Right.
And a real estate trust then purchases the property with its own money. And, I mean, it's really pretty simple. We have enumerated it. I think you have it on the website, don't you, Jim?
We do. We have quite a bit of that on the website.
Yeah. Is that your question, Laura?
Yeah, but that's primarily the three ways that you can get money from the trust is to either distribution or salary, or you can borrow from the
And you could also use it to write off expenses. If you're going to, let's say you want to look at a piece of property in Europe, right? So you break that down. That is your intent to go to Europe and buy a piece of property or invest in a business. You write the minutes. So the trust gets to pay for your airfare. The trust gets to pay for your hotel. I wouldn't have it pay for, you know, fancy dinners, but the trust can pay for most of your expenses and something like that. But you have to document it with the fact that that was your intention. You know, pick up some business cards, pick up brochures, something like that. And if you actually do purchase a business or a property, that much better.
Okay. So the things that we do that are going in the trust, that stuff, we don't have to pay back. Am I correct in saying that?
I mean, if you're borrowing from the trust?
Well, just say if it was some type of investment that I wanted to make the initial investment from the investment is going to go back into the trust, the proceeds from it. But just say if the investment went south, would I have to take that money? Would I have to pay back that money to the trust, or because it was just an investment, it was just a wash?
Go ahead, Jim. You finish.
All right. I'm sorry. If you have a bad business venture, it's just a write-off. It's not that you did it bad. It's just it did it. You know, that happens all the time. So then it's just a write-off. You can write it down on your taxes. For you, if you borrow money from the trust, you should pay it back, or maybe the Board of Trustees knows you real well and figures, you know, you've done such a great job, we're going to forego that. We'll just let it go, you know. And I'm sure that you are well-liked by your trustees, right?
Right.
You know, right. Me, myself, and I, we love each other. We get along real well. You know?
Absolutely. And one other, now, as far as the trust that we have, do we need to leave these with some kind of law firm or something so that somebody knows that the trust exists just in case of maybe our untimely deaths or something, so that, you know, like relatives, you might come out of the woodworks and want to claim monies from the bank accounts or whatever, just can't claim it, but the law firm or whatever will make sure that everything that was within the trust is honored at that point or something like that?
Well, gosh, guys, be careful how I answer this one. I don't trust attorneys at all, you know, frankly. I don't deal with them too much. I even have a couple of my family. I definitely don't deal with those. yes. You do need to have somebody that is watching out for your estate, especially on an untimely demise. Example,
okay. My
business partner, John Newell, died suddenly. Well, it wasn't suddenly, let's put it this way. He survived the cancer, but he did not survive the chemotherapy. He got his clean bill of health, and 7 days later, I found him dead on his couch. Okay? So, yeah, I know, it was really tough. And so in that case, I was the appointed successor trustee, but he never signed the trust. We just redid all the trusts. He never signed it. So now his estate's kind of a mess, but we're working through it.
Right.
But I was there to take care of the paperwork. Even though it wasn't signed, I was able to work through it enough with the creditors to where it didn't devastate the estate. So you have to make sure your paperwork is always current. And you should keep the original in your safe at your house. You should burn a copy of, not burn, let me rephrase that. You should make a copy of the trust in its entirety and give it to whoever is going to be the successor trustee. So they have a copy. They got that to read in an emergency. And then they should know how to get in the safe. You can actually put a note in the trust where to go find that combination, but you keep it with you. I wouldn't necessarily give it out because you don't know where that trust binder is going to end up. You know, it's just a copy. You got to be careful. But what John had done, John and I are both computer geeks, and he had left a hint about something on the computer I needed to read. Well, I could figure out what the hint was, and I did go read it. It was his letter of wishes, exactly what he wanted done with his remains and the whole nine yards. And we did everything he said that he wanted to be done. So keep that in mind. There's ways to do this. So to reiterate this, I won't use an attorney because they're going to try and find things wrong with everything. That's what they get paid for.
You know? Right.
You know? And then you got to, your family has to deal with an attorney. That's never fun. So I wouldn't do that. I would put it someplace very safe, in a safe place, and then make a copy of the whole thing and hand it to your successor trustee or trustees so they've got a copy of it so they, in an emergency or an issue comes up, they can go through the thing real fast, get current with it. They should have read it, but they'll be current with it, and then they can go get the original and make all the changes as necessary.
Okay.
That's how I'm setting mine up right now. I have two people that will be notified upon my timely or untimely demise. One is Carol, and one is my ex-business partner's son, Michael. So
okay.
They both will be able to get a hold of all my records, and they both will have a list of all my, well, Carol's already got a list of all my passwords and everything, so she can transmit them. She's not in the same state I'm in right now. She can transmit them to Michael, and because Michael doesn't have them, and then he can get into the computer and do what he needs to do to help close out my estate. That's how we've set it up. So,
okay.
I'll just give you an idea.
And folks, that's one of the reasons we stress you must name a successor trustee. If you pass away without naming a successor trustee, your trust becomes wide open.
And
so it's very,
that,
very
we won't
important.
Won't do your trust unless you have one.
Exactly. And we have refused to do trust until somebody names a successor trustee. You need to name somebody that's responsible, somebody you know will carry out your wishes. It's one of the reasons we also suggest doing a triple play, which, as you know, includes a power of attorney, a health care power of attorney, which is very, very important, and a pour-over will, which states that anything that you still personally own at the time of your death pours over into your trust. So we've set up these safeguards for you, but obviously they do not do you any good unless you appoint the correct person. And as I said, we will not do a trust with that one.
A side note on that?
Yeah.
Sorry?
As I alluded to a few minutes ago, I did a face plant in my living room, actually dining room, and I look like I went about 5 rounds of Muhammad Ali. My eyes are black. My lips are all swollen up. I mean, my glasses went into my bridge of my nose, and oh, I was just a mess. But I was cognizant enough to grab. I have a small binder. I grabbed it, took it with, and when I got there, it had my medical directive in there, because it took me out of hospital, and it had my medical directive in there, and I have 5 copies, and they're all personally signed, and I handed them one. So now it's in their computer. And the last time I was in the hospital was about a year ago, in that hospital, and it wasn't current. So get your medical directives. Keep it handy. If you don't remember it, have a binder someplace. Mine's bright orange. It's easy to pick out of the deal. And, well, it's just white, but I put bright orange slips inside the slip covers on the cover so you can see it's bright orange. It says medical directive and last will and all that stuff. Somebody can grab it and bring it to the hospital. You need to have that done because, you know, my letter of wishes says, you know, you got 3 shots at it. If my heart fails, you got 3 shots at it, then give it up because that means I don't want to be here, basically. So they got to know what to do. And my medical directive was very explicit, and the doctors are very impressed, I must admit. And this is the one that we market for. This is the one that we do for you. So get that. Get it ready. If you don't have ours, at least get one. You can stop by any doctor's office. They'll give you a one to fill out. They're not very good, but at least you got something.
Yeah.
So be prepared. And guess what, folks? It's coming the end of the year. Have you got your year-end minutes ready yet? You got 45 days. Yeah, 45 days. Yep. So I'm already writing my year in minutes. In fact, I was going through some of my finances this morning on my spreadsheet and making little notes on a piece of paper about what I have to write for each one of my trusts. So, you know, you want to always close out the year with a minute telling you, you know, what you did for the year. So I've got my notes, and I'll now sit down and start compiling all the minutes for each one of my trusts. It's usually about 7 or 8 minutes. It takes me all of about an hour per trust, and that's it. That's for the whole year, because I have everything written down. It's all handwritten, and now I'm going to formalize it. So be sure to get that done. If you have any questions on that, it's on the website.
Now, questions in regards to that is...
Pardon me?
No, I was going to ask a quick question in regards to what you just said. Does it matter what day you choose as far as your year end is, or does it, or should it be the actual end of year, like December 31st?
Since you have an EI number with the Mother Lode Trust, it's always January.
Okay.
No matter when you start your trust, it's always January. And remember, folks, the born on date. Remember, like. Budweiser advertises, we have a born-on date on our cans of beer. Oh, whoopee. But born-on date, your trust date, the date that trust was actually born, if it has an EI number, is the day you got the EI number. If it's a trust that does not have an EI number, then it's the day that trust was delivered to you or sent to you, or the day that you know, we could put down the day that you applied for the trust. Doesn't matter to us. But the date for a trust that has an EI number, for banking purposes, we use the day that we got that EI number. So, but as far as closeout, anytime after the first of the year, you know, within 30 days, it's fine. As long as you've been taking notes. I have, like I've said, I got these, let's see what these things are called. Let me grab my book. It's just a little out of reach. Here it is. When I was working on this morning, and this is a spiral binder. It's called a college ruled notebook, one subject, 70 sheets, 10.5 by 8 inch. And that's what I use for all my trusts. It's got three hole punched on top of the spirals, and it goes in my trust binder. And I pull it out and I make notes in it. And I have one on my desk at all times for my daily activities, just keeping a list of everything I do and making notes. Very important to keep pretty good records. Now, it's not so much for you, it's for your successors. They have to know what you did. They have to see how you ran the trust so they can continue. Hopefully you've done it well and done it right. But this is for your successors. They have to know where you stand, where the trust stands. So that's why it's important to get that done. Be working on it. Does that kind of answer your question?
Yes.
All right, perfect.
Okay, we've got a few more callers, and then we're going to have to, I've got a few things to say before we close, so how about we're going to end these callers right now. I mean, the three that we've got waiting are the last three, okay?
Okay, all right.
So, Oona, you're up.
Hi, morning.
Hi.
Jim mentioned about we're going back to becoming a republic.
Yes.
Right. How significant is that? What are we now then?
Well, it's extremely significant because we were created as a republic and somehow we got switched over to a democracy, and it shouldn't be. And that's probably going to happen, and I'm suspecting, because I'm hearing March or April this coming year is going to be plan to go, and there's some specific reasons for that, is the moment that some of these things are announced, they have 120 days to have a new election for the new republic. Now, I shouldn't say a new republic, it's the old republic. We're bringing it back. We're getting rid of the crap we got right
now. What are we called now?
Pardon me?
What are we called now?
Well, we're called a democracy, which is a misnomer. It's actually, we're under admiralty law and maritime law, which means we are slaves. You know, we're a vessel. That's why the word, or the definition, I don't want to go too far down this, but That's why we're called a person. Okay, because the definition of a person is corporation, trust, or other entity. We're actually a vessel. We're a boat. And we're a bit cast adrift.
Yeah,
we
we're drifting
back on land. And so the republic is born on the land, where the maritime and admiralty is born on the water. We're basically a cast adrift vessel. That's what we are right now. And we need to get back on firm ground.
So we're on the maritime law now?
Yes, ready? We are. Yes, we are.
Okay. And the significance of being a republic is?
Well, for one thing, we have over 1 million laws that we have to live under. Now, do you know all those 1 million? Can you live under 1 million laws and
no.
know that you're secure in everything you do? Because do you know all those? Nobody knows all those laws. You know, there's no way for us to live under those laws. You know, there's this, kind of like the Ten Commandments. You know, there's 10 things you got to do to be a good person. Well, basically, same as the Republic. You got probably 100 things you got to worry about, and that's about it. And yeah, we got to compliant laws. There's no way you can be compliant with the laws. They'll get you on something. They do it all the time. There's an obscure law from 1860. You know, it's, I don't know. They come up with all kinds of weird things. The thing is, we need to get back to a common sense government.
Where would I find this information to read up about it?
There's a lot of books out there right now that are just coming out, and I would just go to Amazon and look on Amazon and search America as a Republic or Republic form of government in America. Make sure you put America and Republic the same phrase or you won't get what you want. But
oh, okay.
You know, we were under Republic. We were for... 150 years we were a little less than that, a republic, and then in about the 18, right after the Civil War, we became a democracy. And pretty much what happened is we gave up our country to the bankers, and they changed everything to admiralty and then to maritime law so they could control everything you say and do.
Okay.
And I don't want to go too
I
far
guess.
Down that, but that's the problem. That's the problem.
I know, that's the rabbit hole. Okay. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you. Okay. Robert, you are next.
All righty. Hello, you two.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. I just wanted to refer back to the transaction that's about to happen, and I don't have a trust, and I prefer to have a trust. Well, I'm not able to right now. What's the best strategy not to put it in my name?
A trust.
Yeah, but I you know I can't afford it right now.
Why don't you do this?
So go ahead.
Monday give me a call. And
oh,
I
okay.
can probably give you
afternoon
a solution. Yeah, I'm on the West Coast, so from 9 a.m. To 6 p.m. is the only time I'll take calls, and I don't take calls on the weekends.
Okay.
I need some time to myself. You know, even though we work out
not
at
a
home,
problem.
You know, I still have to have time away from the computer. It just drives me crazy. And at my age, everything's got an older and crankier, you know, older. So, yeah. All right.
Not
so,
a problem.
Yeah, give me a call on Monday. We'll talk about it.
Will do. Thank you.
All right. You bet.
Thank you. Hey, Avis, you have a question?
Yes. My question is, I need to P.O. Box information, please.
Okay.
I have a note already to send you that information.
Perfect.
Oh, okay. And the phone number, you guys going to give your phone numbers again at the end, Jim and...
Yeah, I'll give
website.
Mine this time. Carol, I think, just wants to use her email address now. I'll go ahead and give out mine, as long as there's only you know, Monday, Friday. No problem. By the way, folks, it's a good question. Very good question. Thank you for that. It's top of the hour. We're going to get off right after this. That information is on the website under the In the menu, it says tools. Just scroll down. You see all of the places that we recommend. We're going to add one more to it tomorrow, I think. I'm going to talk to Carol about that. We may have four places for you to have your mail delivered instead of three. So with that said, are we done, Carol?
Well, thank you. I just have a few things to close with. Thank you, Avis. I just have a few things to close with, but would you like to give your information before I do that?
Sure. Jim Knox is the name. Trust or my game. No, just joking.
That's a good one, Jim.
I know. I'm on the West Coast. I'm in Salem, Oregon temporarily. I will be moving to Florida after the first of the year. And so I work 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, not on weekends. And the best phone number to get a hold of me, I'm going to give you actually, pulling it up right now, I have an 800 number. There it is. You can call me at 866-341-6907 or 503-583-6791. And Jim, oh no, you want is security@indicatorinformation.com for my email address. That's all I've got, Carol.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jim. Thank you for all of you for asking the question. They were, as usual, very good questions. Most of you are aware that Jim and I work from home. It does not mean that we are available 24/7. As Jim just said, he's got to get away from the computer, as do I. We do understand that many new people listen to these calls and are posted on IQD calls on YouTube are not aware of that, so this is for them. We have gotten calls as early as 6:30 in the morning and 11 o'clock at night, and this is just plain rude in anybody's mind. So please do not call out of normal business hours. The call-in number for these trust conference calls is 609-663-5453, and there are no codes necessary. As you know, we generally have calls every second and fourth Saturday of the month. That is not the case for the rest of the year. The fourth Saturday of November is Thanksgiving weekend, and I will be visiting family in Florida. The fourth Saturday of December is the 26th, Christmas weekend, and coincidentally, Jim's birthday. Our first call in 2021 will be January 9th. Once again, thank you all for your time and attention. My name is Carol Worlius. The best way to reach me is email info@indicatorinformation.com. Have a happy and safe Thanksgiving, and we'll see you all next year. Thank you. Bye-bye.